On the first episode of RSBNB Update in 2018, we talk Seekers and Soul Gazers, their mechanics, their drops, and whether Slayer always needs to be about the drop. Also, our take on the year ahead for 2018, and an in-depth explanation of Meltdown Inspector. This is RSBNB Update, episode 653, recorded Thursday, January 11th, 2018, Gazing for a Win. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to RSBNB Update for the year of 2018. This week, we are back as we do have a RuneScape update this week. We took last week off because there was no update, and, you know, I just thought that, oh boy, that clip show that Sirion and I recorded at the end of December was so awesome and so great that you guys probably needed another week or so to listen to it and digest it. And, hey, maybe some of you guys wanted to listen to it again because I know that this is the first clip show ever where we had the case of the co-host who was recording the clip show, in this case Sirion, actually lose it and have to mute himself inside. Oh, and here we go. Okay, I forgot to turn Hey Siri off after our issues last year, and here we are this year, first episode of 2018, 55 seconds into the podcast, and we have a false activation of Siri. Put that off to the side. But you guys are probably hearing laughing in the background, and that means I should get to the point at hand here. But that was such a great clip show last year and absolutely hilarious. And the point I was making was that was the first time ever that the person co-hosting the clip show has actually lost it on the clip show while listening to the clips. So there we go. But 2018, we're looking forward now. And I ended 2017 on the note that, you know, we did a lot of good things in 2017, but to bring you guys the kind of episodes that I want to bring you guys and to focus on what we truly need to do to, you know, keep RSBNB Update where it's at and take it to the next level, I needed a somewhat more permanent co-host. And as a result of that, this year, we're going to see where this goes, but for at least 6 months, I have the same person here. You guys are going to hear the same person here. And that's Tanis. You guys have all heard him before. He's part of RSBNB Informer, been a part of RSBNB Update many times. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Shane. And that was my favorite clip show of all time so far. So
yeah,
great job.
Yeah, that was I mean, there are just so many interesting things because everyone brought their own unique flavor to it. It was almost like listening to different chapters of RSBNB Update from Mr. Bistro's clam moment.
Mr. Bistro, dude. I replayed that like 3 times. I even let other people, I'm like, check this out. did he just say what I think he said?
Then we had the issue in the summer of Jupiter and the probe and the red spot that was photographed, and then all the way at the end of the year we had the issue during the lore podcast with Colton. So
yeah, it was a great clip show.
But a lot of fun. That's at episode 652 of RSBNB Update. If you haven't listened to that yet, update.rsbnb.com, it's there. But this year, you know, it's 2018, Jagex put out their year ahead post. We'll talk about that in just a brief moment here. But first, I think there's nothing more traditional than RSBNB Update to talk about the RuneScape updates of the week. So we're going to start that off, and 2018 was kicked off with the Stalker Slayer creatures, of course, from Daemonheim, and they have been added to Zamorak's Hideout, which you need to complete Dishonor Among Thieves to access. So that's a pretty high quest requirement to access these Slayer creatures. They're at level 71 and 99, respectively. The level 71 ones, what did you think when you were fighting the Seekers at level 71, Tanis?
I didn't think that. Well, they have a decent amount of health, but they're not bad at all.
Yeah,
I didn't think it was that bad at all. The worst part of Seekers or Soulgazers, for that matter, is it's locked behind Dimension of the Damned. Was that, wait, not Dimension of the Damned?
Dishonor Among Thieves.
Dishonor Among Thieves. See, yes, that's the we know how I love that quest, right? So,
Yeah.
that's the
Definitely.
hard part. But the Seekers, eh, not bad.
Okay. So a little bit on the Seekers before we get to the actual Soul Gazers here, because the Seekers are what you need to fight in order to access the part that we want of the Soul Gazer, of course, the Hex Hunter bow. The Seekers themselves are level 86 with level 71 Slayer requirement, have 24,000 life points, and don't hit very hard. And, you know, this is pretty much what I would call a Netflix and kill kind of task. Or a Netflix and Slay kind of task. You know, you just put something on the background, let Revolution go and heal yourself periodically, and there you go, right? So, not much to write home about on these, I don't think.
No, but I think that was I think they're doing a good job of balancing those kind of Slayer creatures, those traditional kind of Slayer creatures, and the other a little more active ones, like with the Creatures of the Grove, where
Right.
if you're those can put a hurting on you. So I think there's a good mix, a good balance they're doing with this.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there was also some discussion here about the Seekers in particular and their loot. The Seekers I found were actually not that bad of a task. It was about 1 million GP in the task that I got of them. And we'll talk about how I got that task in just a moment, because that's also another big thing for 2018 that we weren't truly expecting. Sampling some of the drops you can get from the Seeker's Stalker Essence, which allows you to convert a dark arrow to a stalker arrow, which is the new ammunition that's, of course, supposed to be used with the tier 80 Hex Hunter bow. You can also get dragon and onyx bolt tips, which I find very interesting because those are good to disassemble for their components. And I mean, I think that we're also looking at a spot here where not too many people use those tip bolts anymore, because then back in the day they were just so expensive. Because who really wants to cut up an onyx for that, right?
Yeah, exactly. I
So.
mean, you might get a handful when you went and did Corp or something like that, next, but yeah, you're not cutting up your Onyx for that.
Yeah. And these are also going to be a very good creature to fight if you're in the process of training summoning to level 99, because they drop a noted amount of fire talismans, anywhere between 1 and 5. And basically, as we all know, the fire talismans can be used to make the fire titans. And back in the day, that was one of the very good ways to train summoning, was with those titans and the fire talismans. But back then, these talismans were just too expensive. So it's nice to see this kind of secondary being dropped, because it's not a secondary you normally think of, right? So
Panic cell talismans.
there you
Panic
go.
cell
There you go.
talismans. Just in time for double XP weekend.
Yeah, that's right. That was also alluded to in the year ahead post. Also on the drop table here, battle staves dropped one at a time and noted. And, you know, these are the battle staves that you use for crafting. And when you think about it, there is really no other source in the game for these aside from the battle staff shop. So I don't see this as a real negative drop. And if you look at this drop table here, you'll see that the vast majority of items are not related to any of the primary skills. They're not related to fishing, of course. They're not related to mining. There's no ore. There's no bars on this drop table. And they're also not related to woodcutting. So this goes in tune with what Jagex said they were going to do of making those gathering skills valuable again, and that you're going to see a reduced amount of these things appearing on drop tables of new NPCs. So as you can see here, that is being observed internally.
Hence the community growing pains.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to speak about growing pains here for this in just a moment, because if you look at the tasks here, these are not your dark beasts. The Seekers are not your dark beasts, and you know, there's always some question when these things come out, is that should these tasks maintain a parity with other Slayer tasks that are already out there to provide a good value to them? And my answer is no. And this isn't because I'm not a Slayer person. It's because if you look at this update on the whole, the Seekers and Soul Gazers Slayer update, the point of this update is a synergy between Seekers and Soul Gazers gearing up towards the Elite Soul Gazer, which allows you to have a chance at receiving the Hex Hunter bow. So in my view, the Seekers are something that you must fight in order to improve your chances of getting one of the Hex Hunter bows. And with that, yes, there is a good value, and I'm not going to call it, you know, astronomically good. I'm just going to call it good from the Seekers here. So in that regard, I think Seekers are perfectly fine the way they are right now.
See, now I think Seekers could be better, but I agree with you in this respect. I think that there is supposed to be – this is supposed to be an enclosed ecosystem. There's a synergy between the Seekers and the Soul Gazers and what is offered here. It reminds me a lot of how the Legion's dungeon works, where they have that synergy between the people doing Slayer and the people doing bossing. And this is – kind of all within Slayer itself. So I think that's kind of cool. And I like to see them doing things like this. So no, I don't think that there needs to be parity with other Slayer mobs, because then you're always going to be stuck in that rigid structure, you know? I want them to do new things and different things. And I think this is a good way. It was a good way to do that. That being said, I can really see these turning out like the Gemstone Dragons, and where they were okay at release. There wasn't, you know, too much to be excited about. There wasn't too much to complain about. I feel these are kind of similar in that regard. I don't think the Seekers especially are anything to really write home about, but they're not bad.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so it's just kind of like, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. And that leads us into the Soul Gazers. So the Soul Gazers themselves are combat level 128, requiring level 99 Slayer to kill, with 40,000 life points. And these are weak to arrows, and we'll talk about why that's important in just a little bit. Now, this comes the point of the podcast where we have that regular internal debate as to whether or not the Slayer tasks need to net a certain amount of value to them. And, you know, this was submitted to as a question to us via Whitey Gaming on Twitter, and, you know, thoughts on the community dismissing the new Slayer creatures if they aren't 3 mil GP per hour plus. And, you know, granted, it might not always be 3 million GP plus per hour, but I think that's something we've all seen before, is that in the minds of many who slay and who PVM, if something doesn't drop a good item or good amount of GP per hour, it's just not worth fighting, right?
Yeah. And that's the perception. I think it needs to, I don't want to say like it has to change overnight, but there has to be more of an openness. People have to be more open-minded when it comes to these new Slayer mobs.
Yeah, definitely. Because if they're not, then, you know, you are effectively siloing yourself, and you are looking down an increasingly narrow path. And in some ways, it's kind of like what happened with the reaction of Old School. When Old School came out, is that, you know, there was a portion of the community that didn't want to adapt to the way RuneScape and the way it was going, and so they requested Jagex create Old School. And, you know, this is very much the same thing, except in terms of combat and the amount of GP that you get from these creatures. And yeah, based on what we've seen, the Soul Gazers themselves are a little bit better in terms of the drop rates, but they have the same drop table as the Seeker. But the problem is, and this is the way many people see it, I don't see it this way, but many people do see it this way, is that the Soul Gazers are level 99 Slayer, thus must have a better GP per hour, or better XP per hour than, I'm guessing, something like Dark Beasts, which are level 90, right? But Dark Beasts are still going to be supreme for that. So there we go. And that is the internal discussion that happens every time there's a new combat monster released. You said you saw it with Gemstone Dragons. We're seeing it again here. Mm-hmm. And in this case, well, I think the community should not be dismissing these creatures because of that.
No, and I think there's an added variable this time. Like I mentioned before, growing pains. And this is a transition time. And I want people to give Jagex enough leadway. Just hear me out. Give Jagex the leadway that they need to be able to develop this new system, this new ecosystem, and this new way of drops happening. Right now, you'd think they're not worth very much because they're not dropping ore. They're not dropping bars. They're not dropping stuff for wood. Yeah. They're not dropping all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so you automatically think, oh, well, this is crap, man. You know, there's no money. But it's not supposed to. We're in a transition time so that everybody can enjoy this game to its fullest, the Slayers and the Skillers. So I think we all just have to, kind of give a little here and give it a chance, see where it goes, see how we do.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, one thing that I would like to point everyone back to is to recall why the Slayer skill was initially brought into the game back in January of 05. And the reasons the Slayer skill was brought into the game back then was not because we needed more things to kill that would, you know, give us better drops and give us more GP. That was a pleasant side effect of it, to the tune of, you know, Abyssal Whips being north of 100 mil and then falling down to 20 mil for a long, long time. But the point of the Slayer skill back then was to provide variety towards combat training so that people wouldn't be consistently camping at the Shadow Warriors under the Legends Guild. Because before Slayer came out, the Shadow Warriors under the Legends Guild was the most popular training area, second to probably the Fire Giants in the backstory in Cave. And this was, of course, before the Chaos Tunnels came out. So those were the two main places that people fought based on their level back before Slayer came out. And the whole purpose of Slayer was to provide variety on the way of training combat. But it seems over time we've lost that, and Slayer has just become the default money-making go-to. And if you watch the RuneFest skilling in 5 years talk that happened at RuneFest 2017, you'll recall that they said they want to bring skilling back, so it is pretty much on par with combat. And this is, like you said, Tanis, the transition phase for that. So I think specifically in regards to this update and Whitey's question on this, that, yeah, people are missing a huge point here and that they shouldn't be throwing this out the window, because it all comes back to the Hex Hunter bow, which we should talk about now.
Yeah.
So if you're fighting, if you're fighting the Stalker creatures, or the Seekers rather, you will have the chance of receiving a Seeker Charm every so often. And these Seeker Charms right now are going for roughly 16K on the Grand Exchange. So there is something from this task that you can sell here. So, I mean, it's not something that you're going to want to sell necessarily, because this plays into that synergy that we were talking about, because if you deposit the Secret Charms in this dungeon, you have a higher chance of spawning an Elite Soul Gazer when you are fighting the Soul Gazers. And the reason you want that is because those have the higher chance, the Elite Soul Gazers have the higher chance of dropping the Hex Hunter bow. And two versions of the Elite Soul Gazer can spawn. One is just called Soul Gazer Elite. Another one is called Veil Ripper Oz Haraka. And as you can tell here, it's always fun pronouncing names like this. So.
But, good old Jagex.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So that's what you want to be going for when you are going down for this whole Stalker creature experience, is this synergy gearing up towards the Hex Hunter bow. Now, I haven't fought Soul Gazers. I haven't fought Elite Ones because I don't have the Slayer level for them yet. But let's talk about the Hex Hunter bow, shall we?
All right.
So, back in the day, in November, I believe it was, there was a content showcase that showed that we were going to be getting these creatures. And they said it was going to be a tier 80 bow, and it was going to have an accuracy boost that would bring it to roughly a tier 92 accuracy level. That's what they said during that stream. Unfortunately, that I don't think, based on the language used, has been delivered here. So here's what we got. We got a tier 80 short bow that has a 10% damage boost against magic enemies. Also, the accuracy boost is classed internally inside the game as an affinity boost towards creatures that are weak to arrows. And that's an important term right there, the affinity boost. And Now, Mod Ryan on Twitter said that this 10% damage boost against magic enemies is there, but it may not be noticeable due to the way damage is calculated. So there's two issues right there. The first issue is that the damage boost is really small and, you know, really isn't worth it when you are fighting Slayer creatures. And the second is the term affinity boost. And I think anyone can say here is that if you have, you know, dual ascensions at tier 90, which many people do who do Slayer, you are just going to rip anything apart that is weak to arrows or weak to anything ranged with that level and a high range level using ascension bows and the proper ammunition, because those already have such a high accuracy boost on those ascension bows that they're just going to go right through whatever you're going to encounter doing Slayer, unless it is the very elitist of the Slayer monsters that we have in game currently. So that leads us to the question that you asked before we began this, Tanis, so I'll ask you to repeat that right now regarding the affinity boost.
Do enlighten. I said a lot before the show, Shane. I don't know.
basically, if you have an affinity boost, who benefits from the affinity boost?
So,
in combat.
Yes, it's okay. So yeah, I've had trouble kind of internalizing this Hex Hunter bow, because the only the most elite high level bossers are going to be they're the only ones that's even going to be familiar with the term affinity boost, right? Because it's just not something a lot of people are familiar with to begin with. And so by the time that you would, if you're going to use this bow, right, you're going to use it pretty much for Slayer, because it's not going to be effective, it's not the most effective in slot for that highest level PVMer. So they're not going to use it. So then you're going, well, what would I use this for? So in theory, it's a great idea. I'm really like, I was all for it.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I still
me too.
Think there's a place for it, but we have to figure out what that is. And I mean, an affinity boost essentially is kind of an accuracy boost, but it's Reverent, the weapons you get from Reverence, those have the affinity boost, right? Those, that's what makes a difference. And like you might use a Warhammer or something in certain situations. And a lot of times when people do that, they bring a switch even then. So I just don't see this. I don't see this bow being. It just doesn't make sense. Like it just. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. I can see where they want to be, and I can see their vision, and I like it, but I don't think that's what we have.
Yeah, and you know, I think what the problem is here is that one, like you said, it's not explained anywhere what this means, and you really need to go deep into the weeds of the combat system to understand this. Now, I'm going to quote from the RS Wiki here because they explain it really well. Basically, every time you have a monster, they have an affinity, and there are the following affinities. You have an affinity of 90 against their explicit weakness, 65 against their explicit weaknesses style, so in that case ranged, whereas the exact affinity would be arrows in this case, 55 against the style that they're neutral to, and 45 against the style that they're strong against. And what this does at the end of the day is it factors itself into the combat accuracy calculations in terms of if you can hit. But recall that this is a level 80 bow. Now, if this affinity boost is just an affinity boost against things that are weak to arrows, okay, that's fine. But you're going to get better mileage by using your ascension crossbows, if that is indeed the case, if you already have them. And I would like to point out right now that the grand exchange price for this bow is 106 million GP, whereas you can get a pair of ascension crossbows for less than that.
Exactly. And if you were to use this as intended, as a niche Slayer weapon, you don't need an accuracy boost. for Slayer mobs. Sorry, you don't.
And that's what you're gonna hit designed this as, was a weapon for Slayer.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we're in a situation here where this weapon could be fixed in a number of ways. And, you know, there was if you look at the talk page on the RS Wiki for the Hex Hunter bow, which, you know, is a great resource to go to, so much better than certain websites out there and better than the official forums for getting. Website? I'm not ready to go down that path yet. Let's try and have one episode in 2018 where we don't need to do that yet.
All right.
Where you have good discussion and in-depth discussion of what's going on. And, you know, it was said there's a 10% damage boost that would make this equivalent to a tier 88 bow in some of the literature that was published by Jagex. But in reality, Hex Hunter at tier 80 plus 10% should be giving you a max hit of 2189 with the appropriate strength bonus. But in reality, the tier 80 Hex Hunter bow is only giving you a max hit of 2004. So, as you can see, if that 10% boost was factored in, you would be seeing roughly a level of performance that was on par with tier 90 weapons here. And, you know, I'm going to just say that if they add an accuracy boost that brings these weapons up to the level of a tier 90 weapon, if you're fighting against things that are weak to arrow, I don't know if the combat system is allowed to do that, or if it would break too many things and they would have to add in a whole new suite of combat gear to, you know, handle the other styles. But if they were to make truly a weapon that was, you know, good for things that were weak to arrows, so much so that it gets a huge accuracy boost that it makes a tier 80, like, you know, a tier 88 or a tier 90, I think that would be a pretty neat thing to have. And if it had the flat 10% damage boost like we're seeing right here, that would be a good weapon to use for Slayer because it would be tier 80. Now, the only
So you're saying if they had given us what they promised, it would be a good weapon.
Yeah, basically what I'm saying is that if the calculation for the 10% damage boost was done a little bit later in the chain of the damage calculation, we would be seeing a better result. Because to me, what this looks like is that, yes, we're getting a 10% damage boost, but it's being done so early in the damage calculation when it's coming off the weapon rather than after other bonuses, is that 10% is kind of meaningless because it's being dwarfed by everything else.
I got you. See, and I know this stuff. So can you? Okay, I got what you're saying now. It's almost just a matter of they put it in too early. That if they had done that at the end of the end of
inflation. Exactly. Okay. Like if you multiply the damage coming out off the bow at the very beginning by 1.1, you get nothing. After you factor in boosts from your range level. Range level would actually probably be the range level affects accuracy, so that would be very early on. Now you also have the bow itself, which is tier 80. That's also going to be very early on. So if you just added on to that very early level right there, that is what they did, and that's why it's getting wiped away in my view, compared to if they added it on after. Like if you look at, for example, a prayer, for example, instead, because prayers are applied near the end of the stream and they provide huge, huge damage boost. Even the 5% prayers do. So if you added it on near that phase of the calculation, you'd be seeing a much better result on the term of accuracy. And then all you need to do is provide the damage boost to things that are weak to arrows, and you got a pretty good weapon.
Well, I think you're onto something here, and that doesn't sound like it would be that difficult of a fix. Do you think they actually they made that determination? They actually thought about it and made the determination of where to put the boost at, where to do that calculation, where to multiply it at?
And see, that's what I'm not sure of, because if you look at the tweets that were sent out by Mod Ryan, he says that this is something that they will look at going forward in the future if it needs to be tuned. And he knows that's where it is right now. So my feeling is that they wanted to do a damage boost, but if they would have went too far, this would have effectively been a weapon that you know would have been irresistible. So they're going to need to buff it in some way in the future. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens with this.
So they were probably so worried about devaluing an actual Saren bow or even the Ascension crossbows that they're
exactly.
like,
because if you bring this up to the level of accuracy of a tier 90 bow, you are going to be very close to the accuracy of the Saren bow. And it's going to be to the point where, you know, the Saren bow is still going to be the best bow to use for high-end PVM instances and whatnot. But for Slayer and whatnot, this would be the bow to use because it would outclass the Ascensions in that regard. So the question is do you want to have something at tier 80 that can perform like a tier 90? And that's probably why we got the result that we did.
Okay.
Which makes sense when you think about it, right? Because we have been in a situation before in this game where things have been way too powerful and they have been adjusted. And that was, you know, the whole venture known as the evolution of combat.
I think it's always better to buff something rather than to nerf it. So I will go with that. Yep. But
you're entirely right in that regard, actually.
Give it some time. I think this is going to get fixed. I think it will. We're going to reach a good balance here.
Precisely. And, you know, that's you hit the nail on the head about buffing rather than nerfing, because unless you are at a point where numbers are so astronomical that it's almost like a case of hyperinflation where you're one hitting practically every monster out there, it's still better to buff than to nerf. So we'll just have to wait and see on this. Mm-hmm. Now, the next thing that was surprising to us is that this was Gold Premier Club content, or at least part of it was. So until January 22nd, you can obtain a Stalker Gland from the Guardian of the Vault at the Grand Exchange, which when given to either the Slayer Masters listed above, so Curadel or Morvern, will guarantee a Stalker task. So this was Gold Premier Club content. And, you know, there was a little asterisk that there would be exclusive content for Gold Premier Club in 2018. Did you end up purchasing Premier Club?
I didn't, but you know when Mott Osborne was asked if that was the exclusive content they were talking about, he said no. So this ended up just being an extra perk, but not necessarily what they were talking about. So I found that really interesting. That was in the live stream this week.
Right.
He had mentioned that.
Okay. You know, that's really perplexing because I thought that this was I thought this was the content.
Yes. I know.
Okay.
I think he was trying to clarify, and he made it even more confusing.
Added more questions to it.
Okay. Yeah.
So now that leads me to a question of my own. So before we came in here, we thought, you know, we're here. It's 2018, and we're going to have exclusive content, and this is going to be the kind of content that we're going to get here. So if we didn't hear Mott Osborne say that, do you think that the amount of content coming out of this was a good amount for Gold Premier Club that we got this week?
I think it was a nice little extra. I think it's better than what they've done in the past where they've said there's going to be content coming and there just really wasn't a lot. So at least we got to see some right in January. That being said, I'm not a big person on surprises when it comes to paying for something. I kind of like to know what I'm getting. So, you know, I'm not real big on the whole idea at all anyway, but, I think it's enough without being overpowered but it's not enough to make me go, oh, I'm definitely getting Premier Club now.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I mean, the value of this task right here is relatively small. In fact, I'd say it's very small. So, you know, this, you know, as for a content exclusive is there, it's nice. And I don't think this is overly game breaking what we got this week. It's not. Now, what adds more questions to what I heard is the fact that Mott Osborne said is that there will be other pieces of content arriving that are going to be Gold Premier Club exclusive. So,
yeah. And that's what kind of tripped me up. I'm like, well, What does that mean? But I'm just, you know, I'm not somebody that likes a lot of ambiguity when it comes to purchasing.
Right.
So I don't know.
And, you know, going into this podcast, I was under the impression that this was the Gold Premier Club content. And I was going to say that this was a good level of exclusivity for this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's more, okay. But we're going to have to see exactly what it is in that case then and hold off judgment for that. If it's too much, that might be a bit of a concern because that effectively adds two tiers of membership.
Well, exactly. And, you know, and keep in mind, the 2018 Q&A, and it was Mod Osborne. So sometimes he gets excited. So there's a lot of questions surrounding the whole thing. If it was, you know, if Mon Mark had came out and said something like that, okay. And not that I don't listen to Mod Osborne, but sometimes he can get carried away, especially in a live setting. So,
oh yeah, of course. We all get excited.
We all do. Yes. I mean, I know I do. I'm guilty. So I just think we're going to have to kind of wait and see. Maybe they'll clarify that, or maybe we can, hope that maybe we'll put something out on Twitter that kind of clarifies a little bit more. I think that'd be helpful.
Yeah. All right. Well, that adds more questions, and I was hoping that we could get a verdict on the Gold Premier Club content today, but we'll just have to wait and see and save that for another day then.
Is this where the sad tuba plays?
Yeah. All right. Other little updates this week. RuneScape is now 17, and you have the anniversary cake back in your inventory. You can eat it once every 3 minutes, and you get life points that are equal to your level. And I think at around level 99, it's something on the equivalent of a shark or a rocktail, so it's actually pretty decent. So,
cake!
That's right.
Love some cake! Yeah.
Okay, now on to the first patch notes of 2018. You know, we had a good discussion about these after the weekly bite, which I'll talk about later. You know, not too many consequential ones this week, but there were definitely a few of them here. So let's begin. The strong arm woodcutting animation override now animates with crystal shards rather than wooden splinters when chopping crystal trees.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. The magic carpet no longer duplicates when taking off and landing at magic carpet stations. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There's also another magic carpet one later that really takes the cake, no pun intended. Examining a party member while in dungeoneering now shows the correct stats, which is something you definitely want if you're doing it with randoms.
Yeah.
Someone couldn't count when the sandstone fix was brought in because 5 kilogram sandstone no longer cuts into 6 1-kilogram sandstone pieces.
I just scratched my head when I heard this. I'm like, huh? Like, how does that happen?
Yeah, I know. Tuska's Wrath is now marked as members only in the Constitution Skill Guide. Evil Dave's Big Day Out is now a 6-age quest. And, you know, there was some ambiguity about that, even though, you know, we did interact with the Temple Knights, and they are clearly in the 6th age, so that kind of made sense when we were doing it. References to Elite White Knights and the White Knights Fortress and Evil Dave's Big Day Out have been corrected to the Temple Knights and the White Knights Castle, as they are in-game. Requirements for Evil Dave's Big Day Out and the achievement system now match those in the quest system. It's quite the disparity. Now, here's one that kind of shows the same vein we were on at the tail end of 2017. Players can now toggle max daily challenges and member skills at the level 5 skill cap. And if a player logs into a member's world, it will be toggled back off. So the idea behind this is that people who are free to play can use the challenge system and not necessarily feel like they're being forced into purchasing membership, which is a really good thing.
Oh, that's cool.
It makes the free-to-play experience just a whole lot more solid and fluid. So,
mm-hmm.
Daily challenges are now only assigned to free players if they also meet the secondary requirements. Previously, these were only checked out for members. That's good. Mm-hmm. Magic log, daily challenges for fire making, fletching, and woodcutting are no longer assigned to free players due to their limited access to magic logs, of course. It's also now consistently easier to cast debuff and bind spells. While Revolution is active in combat, these spells still obey the global cooldown and may now be cast via ability queuing on the action bar. This is a good one. Because, you know, it's combat related, which I get, but it's also one part of the combat system that I don't think many people focus on too much. Because I don't know, are there any bosses out there that require debuffs and binds?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't think so. The debuffs and binds is something you never think about. You never use. The last time I used them was when we had Darkscape, and it actually counted. You do Entangle, it meant something. So it's kind of cool to see that come in so you can, you know, add some variety to your combat if you want to, your magic.
Yeah, and you know, I've long been a proponent of a support magic class aside from a support or offense-based magic class. And, you know, this could be the first step to seeing more spells like that. The Saren spells went a good way, but I don't think they went far enough in that niche. So, and, you know, large bosses, you can't bind them. So there's no use for binding those. And as we all know, unless you're, you know, relatively low-leveled, attacking creatures for Slayer goes really quick, so binds really don't play much role there. And you know, I think in that regards, then the debuffing are the part to really look at here and see where those factor in. So I can see the debuffs being used at bosses if you have mages. So just throw a debuff on there and away you go. So I like. The magic log daily challenges. Oh no, we did that one. The worn equipment interface now resizes correctly. And, you know, this is something that's always odd because there's so many, little widgets on that interface that it's hard to get that happening. So this was done well. There's one that later on in the patch notes here that wasn't, but we'll get to that. The So Much Power special attack in the Telos encounter will no longer deal damage to the player at the start of phase 5. I have not fought Telos, but you have.
I was going to say, you ever got to phase 5, Shane?
No, have you?
No, actually, I never made it to phase 5. I made it to phase 4.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I guess it's probably good, right?
Yeah. It's now possible to withdraw runes in a rune pouch when the same kind of rune is already in the player's full backpack. Nice. The broken fountains in Varrock have been fixed so that players can once more draw water from them. That was a problem for us with the Christmas quest. So,
oh, I didn't even realize they were broken, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what caused that, but good that it's fixed.
I bet they found lead in the water. Come on, Varrock, what the hell? They changed their pipes and stuff. King rolled. What's going on?
Mouse over text now updates your interactable locations, which connect or change state, such as the invention workbench or picked fruit trees. And when you think about it, mouse over text, very important. That's probably what more people use than the actual text that used to appear up in the corner of the screen. So
mouse over text is it makes my life better. It's so good. Like if you ever just happen to play the other RuneScape, you're lost without your mouse over text because it's up there in the corner. You're like, oh, sucks.
Right, and like, and your magnifier is focused around your mouse. So
yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, makes sense. Love the mouse over text. Makes sense. Anything they do that improves that, great.
All right, now here's one that, you know, actually introduced a bug. The consistency of layouts across the Friends, Clan, Friends Chat, and Notes interfaces has been improved. Well, it's been improved so much that you can't see what world your friends are on these days. In the Friends list.
Improvement, man.
And if you go to the Friends Chat or the Clan Chat, you're in a position where if you drag your mouse cursor all the way down, you're going to be able to have some overlapping content on the user interfaces. So, I mean, it's nice to see this as an attempt being made, but this actually made the experience worse because you can't see what world your friends are on, and the names of the people in your clan chat or your friends chat overflows the bounds of the border now. So let's hope this one gets fixed for next week, because it's really annoying seeing it like this.
Yeah, they really jam-flaxed that one, didn't they?
Yep.
Like, literally.
Well, what they did to compensate for it is that there's now a counter for the total number of players in the friends chat located beside the friends chat settings button on the friends chat info interface. Which, I mean, that's good, I guess, but not needed in my opinion, especially when it breaks stuff.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Here, perhaps, is the most consequential patch note of the week, and lots of people are very happy about this one. Magic Carpet Travel Network is now accessed through an interface allowing travel to any unlocked destination from almost any station. However, the Monkey Station still only connects itself, Polivnich, and the Shanty Pass, as it does not charge a fee. And the slow method of traveling by magic carpet has been removed to simplify magic carpet travel. So gone is the animation of getting on the carpet and watching yourself fly across the desert. And now there is just, you know, you access it through an interface and you can travel from any station to any station. Just basically improves getting around the desert. And, you know, they needed to do this after Menaphos came out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad the interface, that's great and everything, but I'm going to kind of miss the slow magic carpet ride.
Yeah, it was nice to kind of look at and see, and it was good for a level of immersion, let's say.
Yeah, but I'm going to kind of miss that.
But it did take some time, and I mean, I think at this point everyone just knows what the expected action of a magic carpet is. You don't need a video to tell you about it. And I don't think there's anyone aside from you here and me who say that maybe removing it was not necessarily right. A bad idea, but a loss of immersion for some, let's just say. So
that's true.
No. All right. There's the first batch of patch notes for 2018. So that leads us into Jagex's year ahead for 2018.
Wow, what a year ahead we have.
Yeah. So.
Or at least January.
January. Anyway. I mean, January, we're going to get the Elder Simulacrum outfit, which, of course, is for divination. You're also going to get the ability to get enchanted Backriminal Bolts, which will add any effect to Backriminal Bolts from one of the 11 gem tips, which is nice. They're also making skill outfit heads, the add-ons for those attainable in-game, and the changes to the aura bag are also going to be there.
We can't skip over what I think is one of the most consequential changes with the skill outfits when they talked about it not being a treasure hunter.
Oh, yes, of course.
That's huge, man. I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah, because those add-ons, you know, really change the outfit and add a whole new level to them. So that's good.
Yeah, that's good. And they're all going to be available through gameplay. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. We also got Hattie, Skull, and Fenrir reappearing as they do every January. Mm-hmm. Vic the Traitor and everyone's most anticipated update, replayability for Sliske's endgame.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to have to get my PTSD group back together for this episode. You did Endgame, right?
Oh, I did.
Did you hear about the problems we had with it?
No, I didn't, but I could only imagine.
So they released Endgame on what was, I believe, December 22nd, 2016. The last update of 2016. And, you know, it's always a hectic time for us at the podcast because we're preparing clip shows where it's hard to get people around that time of the year to do the show. And to top it all off, that was a 7 to 8 hour quest for me.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a hell of a quest, too, to have to cover. Damn.
And just the issues that came with it and whatnot. You know, it was a feeling of PTSD.
I bet.
Okay. Almost more than some things over the holidays that year. So,
yeah, I feel for you, man. Just playing through it was damn near gave that to me. I can't imagine. I feel bad for you.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see what comes from that, and maybe experience it on a fresh set of eyes. So,
yeah, you know, it does sound cool, and they're giving you some pretty cool options with it. You know, you can really focus on the lore, or you know, and not the fighting, or vice versa. So there's some cool stuff there. That he didn't change the maze and make it smaller or anything. So all the guides that were made for it will still apply. I, for one, don't ever want to see that maze again. But, hey, if that's your thing, go right ahead. By all means. And it's cool that they are making that. If nothing else, it's kind of proof of concept. Because you could say that Broken Home kind of was the beginning of quest replayability. But I feel like that was a complete outlier when it comes to quest. And it's not – it was just different.
It was almost more of an in-game experience.
Yes. So I'm glad to see them try this with this quest, and especially with the this was a really consequential quest. So it was cool. There was a big lead up to it. This is kind of like almost like a pillar in the sixth age, you know. So I think it's cool.
It's technically where we left the storyline off. So
yeah, essentially
the last main stake in the storyline. So
yeah.
All right, February, March, and April. Jagex says, now this is where things get interesting, because we start to see the benefit of moving away from expansions. So they say, in no particular order, in February, March, and April, we'll see the Clue Scroll overhaul, which we've talked about before, Solak, Pieces of Hate, Deep Sea Fishing, and a bank rework taster, where they'll be able to provide access to Diango in the costume room accessible from the bank, and all 10 presets will be visible as standard, and junk items will be highlighted for you to ditch at your leisure. Now, you know, this is what I've been saying for a long time here on the podcast, specifically with the bank rework, is that, you know, with the changes that are being made to the game, the Aura Bag, for example, we might not actually need a full-blown bank rework.
Yeah,
and I think with the taster, that might just be enough to get people to say, hey, we're kind of happy right now. Let's work on something else that's not going to take as much time.
You know, I think there are a few staples that it might take them some time. But when we had these, I think the bank rework would be sufficient. Once we have placeholders, and once we can like as you're typing, it is searching. You know what I mean? Like make that active. When those things happen, I think most people would be really happy with just placeholders, to tell you the truth. I think that's what people think of when they think bank rework. So,
yeah.
You know, once we have that, and right now, I mean,
with the taster, that gets us 90% of the way there, I think.
It really does.
At least from the player side of it. Granted, that's probably only 10% on the Jagex side of it from the code that needs to go into it. But you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, the fashion scapers out there will be happy because sometimes we have to throw our stuff in with Diango. You know, get it out with a special occasion every once in a while. So,
yeah,
this will be great.
I agree. Also, Group Iron Man, the difference being that linked Iron Man account can now trade with themselves and participate in multiplayer content such as group bosses and dungeoneering. At that point, that ceases to be Iron Man, in my opinion.
Thank you. I mean, I'm sitting here listening going, huh? Did I hear that right? Because I must have missed that when I watched the stream. I didn't even catch that. That's... No, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and no. I don't think Iron Man would want that. Like, they want the difficulty. Like, they want to do it on their own. That's the whole reason they're an Iron Man.
Yeah.
Huh.
Definitely agree. We'll see. Listeners, you guys agree? Let us know. Safe cracking, talked about a lot at RuneFest and before, like Elder Trees, but for thieving. Safes around the world. Crack them. Take your rewards back to the Thieves Guild for XP and new items. Making the Mimic a permanent addition to the game and probably making it by the actual PVM team rather than a promo team, which would be good. based on what we saw when we fought it. The mining and smithing beta in these 3 months as well.
No way. I know. It's like, really?
Yeah.
I will be surprised if we get that, but it will be cool. It will be cool if
that
happens.
Yeah, it's going to be – and, you know, it's got to be something that people are going to truly focus on in the true respect of a beta. And Jagex needs to make it so that people are not going to just automatically use the level 99 and focus at the higher tiered stuff. There needs to be a full-blown experience from level 1 through 30 through 50 through 60 through 70, 80, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, and so on. And people need to be playing at those tiers as if they would in the real game, because if they're not, then they're not fully testing it out. So people can't just automatically go to level 99 and do what they're doing, because that's what people did in the EOC beta, and we saw how that turned out. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was just a crap show.
Yeah. Spring Fair will be back with less emphasis on rune coins, also housing the Easter event, which I should note, Easter this year is on April Fool's Day. So keep that in mind.
Huh. I liked the Spring Fair last year.
Yeah, it was good.
It's going to be cool.
The mini game hub, bringing all mini games together into one location and cutting some of the more underused mini games in the process. I think we can say.
I love it.
I think we can say goodbye in this case to mobilizing armies.
This might be the time. This might be the time. But how great is it going to be not having to go to all those obscure places? This should have happened when they did the Thaler rework stuff. Like this, that would have made so much more sense. Sometimes you'll see something on Spotlight and you're like, I don't even know how to get there. I don't know where it's at.
See,
well, this is really cool.
I can see that. But then at what point, like, you know, just take mobilizing armies for an example. Then at what point does that lower part of the map serve then?
Well, and
aside from that divination colony.
More room to grow.
I guess.
Right?
Yes.
It's like some real estate sitting out there. We're going to develop it. We're going to drill, baby. Drill.
Right on. That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear, Tannis. You also have the chance to rebuild Edgeville after its Dragonkin decimation. Finally, so many people have been talking about this. This has been on ever since Ritual of Asherana happened, so finally. Finally.
Okay.
Brimhaven Agility Arena will be updated. High-level Agility Arena accompanying its original graphical rework. And also the event calendar. And, you know, they say this is by no means an exhaustive list, but it's there. You know, of these, I think for me, the biggest ones are going to be the Clue Scroll overhaul, Pieces of Hate, Deep Sea Fishing, Safe Cracking, and the Agility Arena. Because, you know, if they can get these all out in the first quarter of 2018, that will show not only that they are keeping to what they talked about at RuneFest, but they are also well on their way to building a RuneScape that is more sustainable for the next 5 years of skilling that was also talked about RuneFest.
You know, and I agree with that. I think that'll be a good step. For me, I feel like I'm not seeing really headlining updates in what we know about. That doesn't mean that there may not be some things that we don't know about.
And that's perfectly fine, because back in the day, there were no headlining updates in RuneScape. I think the only time we truly had a real headlining update in RuneScape was the rework of the desert in Desert Month, working up to Desert Treasure.
Yeah.
And then the construction update a couple months later.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, I think we've kind of gotten used to having, you know, a bigger sized update once in a while. These are fine with me, and the ones I'm excited about, like I don't know, yeah, I don't even know why, but I want to do Safe Cracking.
Oh yeah, me too.
I mean,
me too.
The loot's not gonna be great, but I don't know, I just want to do it. But one thing too, I don't like. Is all their business finished now? Because I don't think so. I mean, there's still a few things that need to be done and tied up, and that hasn't been mentioned at all. So I would have liked to heard a little bit where that's at and what their plan is for that through 2018. But
yeah. But at the same point, they also need to realize that this is the 2018 year ahead post, and it needs to be forward thinking and relevant.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
And
I guess
in some ways, unfinished business is backwards thinking. Even though we do need it in the game.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. Just a little head nod, though, that hey, we still have things that we're going to.
Yeah, and I'm still, actually going to talk about that.
If nothing else, we have
moment.
Some like storylines that we're going to tie up. You know, we know that they said we might be looking at six quests coming up. Maybe if they like threw us a bone with some, you know, maybe tying up the gnomes or tying up some other quest lines. Hey, I'd be cool with that.
Yeah. And you're touching on where I'm going next as well.
Okay, so cool.
And also with this, they announced Double XP Weekend for February 23rd to February 26th, in which they will be doing their 24-hour Game Blast live stream this year, once again raising money for Special Effect. You'll recall last year was Game Jam, which was a more internally focused thing. But this year they're going back to the charity focus for the Game Blast stream and working with Special Effect, which is, I know, something that you are very passionate about, and me too.
I was so happy to hear this. I was like, oh my God, thank you, Jagex. Like, you found your heart again, man. Like, I was really happy. You know, I'll be participating, and I'm going to be in it. I'm really, really excited that they went back to that. And Jagex is, I mean, they've always been special as a gaming company because of what they do and because of like their charity work. And I mean, and helping people be able to game. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm disabled and I'm a gamer, so this is like it's really close to me, and like it means a lot. So I'm glad that they're keep us in mind, and that they're going to help some kids be able to they're going to help some kids be able to play RuneScape. You know, that's cool.
Yeah, totally agree, and I'm glad to see that back. All right, now this is the point where the post, I think, it becomes more speculative at this point, because the rest of this section is highlighted the rest of 2018, and of course in here is mobile due later in the year. So later in the year is when they're focusing on that, and they want to get it completely right and have people involved in the upcoming betas and whatnot. And that, I'll just read this here, so that you are the ones that tell us when it is ready for launch. So this is, you know, this is good, but it's also a little bit concerning that the players are going to be deciding, you know, when.
You don't trust the players, Shane?
Not particularly, no. Not particularly. So that's a little bit concerning. It's almost like player driven quality assurance of their game product, which is not what you want to do, especially in a game where you have people of multiple technical aptitudes, where you have people who know how the game works and could program for the game. And on the other hand, you have people who just know how to launch RuneScape on their computer and play. So when you're dealing with that kind of diverse player base, this isn't something you really want to be doing, in my opinion. So,
you know, I think there's a place for the player feedback, but and I think there's a place for us to help, because let's face it, sometimes Jagex could use some help with quality assurance. But I don't think it should be all on the players, because
and you know, in this post they specifically capitalize the word you.
I know. So I don't trust that either. I think we should have input, but don't put it on our shoulders. I mean, we're consuming the product. We shouldn't
have to test it and determine when it's time to release it. So, all right. Mining and smithing intended for the third quarter. We'll just kind of gloss over that. We talked about that lots before. And now here's where it gets kind of gray. A considerable portion of the bank rework is dependent on RuneScape Mobile, which is why we scheduled this in post-launch. That said, we've separated out the items that aren't, as many as we could, for release earlier in the year, namely the first quarter's bank rework taster, as mentioned above. Does this sound familiar to you, Tanis?
Mm. A little bit.
You know what it sounds? You know what? Do you know where it's going? And do you know what it's very familiar and reminiscent of?
Invention?
No.
Imprint? No.
Menophos. Okay.
Oh, well. See, I thought that, but I'm like, no, it can't be that because we just got away from that.
So, and see, that's the thing.
Yeah.
2017 was all dependent on Menophos. They released the content that wasn't being worked on by the Menophos developers before Menophos came out. And the content that came out after Menophos was, as we know, a mixed bag of unfinished business mm-hmm. and new small pieces of content because of the departure from that. So with that being said, it kind of feels like the second half of the year here, or at least the third quarter of the year, is being made dependent on RuneScape Mobile launching on time. And, you know, if RuneScape Mobile doesn't launch on time, then what happens to the bank rework and all the other updates that were scheduled for third and fourth quarter?
Right. Well, I understand your concern. In my opinion, it's an overabundance of caution because they got bit so hard last year. I think that's probably natural for any company, but we've definitely seen it with Jagex before. So I feel like they're just being overly cautious. My personal prediction, I think we're going to see mobile during the summer. The early to mid-summer, we're going to see mobile. It's going to be out. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And I can see the bank rework coming after that. I don't think it's going to slow anything down. The reason that those are kind of interdependent on each other is because the same people that are working on mobile are the same people yeah. that they need their expertise. Yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense. And I don't think that that's going to say, you know, the bank rework gets pushed back a month or two. I don't think that's going to take away from the other updates or the other content that we're going to be getting. It's only going to affect that one update because it's those particular people.
All right. Well, I got another one for you then.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Now, when it comes to Quest, they say we've got a second helping for you this year, and it comes with a bit of a twist in that we're introducing Needle Skips, a murder mystery quest in which you can solve by entering clues into a magical artifact. So this is kind of the puzzle kind of quest, and you know, these are really the only two quests that are being talked about for the year of 2018, and that puts us exactly on par for what we had in 2017 if you don't count the Menophos quests. So yeah. You know, as a quester, I would have liked to have seen a return to a more traditional questing schedule with, you know, maybe 2 to 3 grand quests per year and 4 to 5 smaller bottle quests per year on the order of Evil Dave level, because I don't know if you did the Evil Dave quest, but that was just an astoundingly great quest. So
okay.
And you know, I would have liked to see more questing in this. So in some ways it feels like everything after mobile here, bank rework, this quest, and what's next, the clan rework, and in particular, the skilling offhands are all dependent on mobile coming out on time. So that's.
See, and I just don't know.
And that kind of gives the feeling of Menophos again, you know?
But I don't. I think you're being overly cautious too. Because, and it's natural, once bitten, twice shy, right? But it's not the same. I mean, the people that are working on mobile and the bank rework, they're not the same people that's going to be developing the quest. It's going to be different teams. We're still going to be getting this content. Now, how many quests are we going to get? How good are they going to be? I really don't know, because in my opinion, that is on a pendulum that just swings from year to year. Some years we just have great quests, and some years we have hardly none, and sometimes they're just crap. So, I mean, it's hard to say. I know that they got really mixed up because, you know, their questing plan was entirely wrapped up in expansions. So they're kind of like going back to the drawing board to figure out how they're going to be doing the lore and stuff. And I think they're also being like they're also being cautious in what they're promising us and the timetables that they're promising us, because they've learned their lessons about that before. And we also have to take into account that with the polling that they've been doing, they've noticed a trend in sometimes the smaller type updates people are really, really enjoying. They're really enjoying those quality of life things. So they might be kind of relying on that towards the second half of the year. I'm speculating now, but that's what I'm thinking.
And, you know, I'm also going to say that come around the time of April and May, we'll probably have another one of those summer summits where we see what's coming for the next few months as well, which I think would be a good way of kind of telling us, you know, giving us the progress update after April, seeing where we're at, reevaluating, and where the game is going to go going forward, kind of like we had at RuneFest this year and like we're getting now in a bit of an update with the year ahead post. And I think that's a good way for them to go rather than, you know, going in, providing a whole year outline and not doing things, because that just erodes trust. And, you know, I have to say that 2018 has to be a year where Jagex wins. They need to win on providing updates that are bug-free. They need to win on providing updates that are on time. They need to win on providing updates that the players enjoy and that the players keep coming back to. And finally, they also need to win in the sense that mobile is a success and not a dud, kind of like Idle Adventures and Chronicle seems to be. So,
That's
what 2018 needs to be. And, you know, if that means this news post needs to be vague in some places, then so be it. But that's what needs to be happening internally at this point.
Oh, I completely agree. That's exactly what they do. And at the same time, as players, let's give them a chance.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as this update went this week, don't hit them over the head the day of. Like, give it a chance. And if we're gonna give some feedback, let's be constructive about it.
Bingo.
You know.
And that's why we're here. And, you know, right, as much as we're here to provide entertainment and summarize the updates for you guys, the listeners, we are here to also provide that criticism on this platform. And with that, also point out two areas based on what we know about you guys, the listeners, and what we know as game players ourselves. Point out those ideas to Jagex where Jagex can win and where we can help them win, because that's what we want at the end of the day. Is we want a very successful year for the company. And I mean, if we can help them with that, then we have accomplished our goal, as long as we're also keeping you guys happy, the listeners, by providing all the information you guys have come to expect from us over time. So,
well, yeah, I mean, if Jagex wins, we win. We have a better game. And if they lose, we lose. So we're all in this. We're all literally in the same boat.
And that is something that people do not seem to get when the day an update comes out and it doesn't give the desired amount of GP or the desired amount of XP, or the weapon doesn't perform as expected, and it's just called garbage right off the bat. That sets a tone in the community, and that sets a tone going forward for the week, for the month, and ultimately, if that continues throughout the entire year, the year. And that relates to a non-winning strategy, and that's why Jagex needs to win this year.
Yep.
All right, and that leads us nicely into our last piece of the RS segment here. And, you know, if you guys follow us and subscribe on the YouTube channel, now that's interesting. That's a very interesting ad on this YouTube video here. I will have to look at that as to why we're getting that, but sorry. If you guys follow us on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/rsbnbstaff, you'll see that this week we released something called the Weekly RuneScape Bite. And what this is a early look on Monday and sometimes maybe Tuesday, depending on the size of the update, a look at the week's RS update and providing, you know, the basic need-to-know aspects of it, effectively the TLDR of the news post, the TLDR of the patch notes and whatnot, and any other things that could be coming in the following week. And this is something we hope to provide each and every week before RSBNB update. It'll also go as a way to kind of build discussion for the week's episode of RSBNB update. And what's more, it's a nice way of reaching out to the community and providing, you know, just that nice little summary of people who don't want to read the news post and people who don't want to delve into the patch notes. So we're calling it the Weekly RuneScape Bite. You can find it at youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. And we hope you guys enjoy it.
Yeah, check it out. Shane did a great job. I thought it was really cool. So I'm really excited to see those continue.
Yeah, and I mean, it's something that is being refined as we go along. I know you guys are going to have input into the patch notes section of it coming forward and other things as well, because I didn't really publish a guideline before it went, because I didn't know if it was going to be successful, if it was going to get views, if it was, you know, just going to be ignored or whatnot. But this did get views, and it was relatively successful for the terms of our channel. So it is definitely something we will be continuing. So if you want to see more of that, youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. You can find the link to that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And it's also worth noting, for those of you guys who listen to the audio version of it, we do put the show on YouTube as well. If you wanted to listen on your TV or just listen on YouTube, you can do that as well. Every week, the RSBNB update also goes on YouTube. So, all right. I believe that sums up the RS segment for the first week of 2018. Anything else before we move on?
No, I think we covered it pretty well.
Okie dokie then. We're going to move on into the questions right now. We got a discussion this week in the form of an audio question from Parnassius.
G'day guys, Parnassius here. Hope you all had a great Christmas and a happy new year. Now, on to my first question of the year, although it is more of a discussion topic on a hypothetical situation. Anyway, here it is. Jagex decides to release a new Master Legendary pet. This Master version allows a player to set a minimum GP limit on what the pet will pick up, as well as guaranteeing that the pet will always pick up the highest value item. In addition, this pet can be overridden cosmetically by any other pet you have unlocked. However, the only way to unlock the Master version is to own every standard Legendary pet available. Do you think this will be viable for Jagex to do, and would you purchase it under these conditions? Why or why not would you buy it? Thanks for taking the time to answer this, and welcome back for 2018.
The topic of legendary pets.
Are you ready?
Yeah. What do you got?
I'm guessing we're going to be a little different here.
Okay, go for it.
Oh, I'd buy the shit out of that pet. Yes. Yes. Okay. One, I love pets. Two, it'd be kind of expensive. That's the drawback. But to be able to override your legendary pet and it would have the functionality of picking your stuff up. Yes. Yes. I want this. I want this like right now.
All right.
I mean, you could override it with your skill pets or your boss pets.
Yeah, it's definitely there.
It's so cool.
And, you know, I think that the idea of tying it behind all the other legendary pets is a good idea. I would actually probably go for this because...
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I'm surprised. When I look at pets and I look at things in-game and, you know, not so much in RuneScape, but more so in Star Trek Online, I prefer the canon look, you know, the look that's not overly modified, right? And the look that kind of fits in with in-universe. And for me, the legendary pets are not in-universe because they're so extravagant, right?
Yeah.
But true. On the other hand, the skilling pets do fit in because they are dropped in-game, right? If you get where I'm going with that, you know?
Yeah.
And same thing with the boss pets, for example. So that side of it is extremely appealing to me. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if picking up the most expensive item is something that, I mean, it could be that perk, but maybe it could be some other perk. Maybe it could be another tier of perks that you can choose from. For these pets, because, you know, right now it can pick up an item. And what if instead maybe it upgraded the perk that rescues you from death so that it can happen more often? That could be an option as well on it. So maybe instead of, you know, just picking up the most expensive item, you have a selection of 4 to 5 other different things that you could potentially choose as elite perks for this. I think that would be an interesting way of doing it. with this. And, you know, to make the adoption of this easier, I would say that rather than, you know, just buying each legendary pet with rune coins off the bat, I think what Jagex ought to do in this case, if anything like this were to ever come out, is offer an entire package at a discount that gets you all the legendary pets and gets you this ultimate pet. Because, I mean, there are people who have not bought any legendary pets who maybe only got the free one that came with the Premier Club that year. So it would make sense then to, you know, just buy everything that's been put into game and have that appear as your pet as for a bit of a discount. So, you know, I think this would actually be a decent idea going forward. Though, I mean, I just worry if that might be a little bit too overpowered picking up the most expensive item.
Well, I mean, but your legendary pet pretty much does that now, or at least mine does. It's like the way it's all in how you set that up and tell it what you want it to pick up.
You're right. That's true, actually. So, you I think a threshold, right?
Yeah. And you can tell it whether you want it to pick up, you know, this stuff or that stuff. So it's, I mean, I think that, I think that would be fine. I don't think that that's a problem at all. And I think you're right about doing the package and discount. This is one of those updates that, like it is a win-win-win, but this would be one of those updates that the small vocal minority would bitch and cry and moan and, you know, they would throw a fit.
Would they, though? Because we're sending more money to Jagex.
All while buying them. Oh, yeah, the same people griping, they would have one. Don't kid yourself. They would have one. But yes, Jagex could make pretty good money from this. I mean, and it doesn't hurt anybody. This ain't hurting anybody. It's not hurting their – it's not devaluing.
Oh, I got it. Pets. Give a 20% discount on the bundle in next year's Premier Club.
Boom. There you go. You're welcome, Jagex. We just we're even helping you out with Treasure Hunter, not Treasure Hunter, but Solomon Store. See, we're the all-purpose podcast.
And see, that's the thing. I have no problem with most of the Solomon Store items and whatnot. So, yeah, this would be a good idea, and you know, it kind of needs to happen at some point, I think, because how many legendary pets are there right now, and what purpose is there to own more than one of them? Unless you like the luck, right?
Yeah, and I mean, and it drives me crazy that because, like, I have to use, like, my legendary pet isn't really an option. Like, I have it helps me be able to play the game. Otherwise, I literally will leave stuff on the ground and won't see it. So, like, I have to use my legendary pet, but you know, I worked hard to get the skill pets that I have, and I'm proud of my skill pets, definitely. And I'm proud of my boss pets, and I can't ever have them out because I really need that legendary pet and I need its functionality. So this would be awesome. I would love it.
I wonder how this would pull if they pulled something like this in game.
I think positive, except for the very vocal minority. Would probably throw a fit.
All right. Well, there we go. There's the answer. I mean, we both said yes on this. I'm trying to think if there could be any downsides to it because, I mean, the functionality already exists in game. It just would be highly tuned, right?
All this would be doing, I mean, when it comes down to it, this is just allowing Jagex to sell even more pets to people that already have pets or people that don't have pets. All this is doing is letting you override the damn thing.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's what you're buying it for. When it all comes down to it, that's what you're buying it for. And I would buy it for that. So.
and you know, it's not an overpowered microtransaction-based item like they are in some games. So.
Yeah, no. No, I mean, like you said, the functionality is already there. If anything, you might – this would be absolutely no different than, you know, like an elite skilling outfit, only this would be
– except this has no impact on the XP that you can get in-game.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I think it would be safe, but, you know –
all right. I'm fine with that. Let's go with that. And maybe we can get this idea out there. That'd be fun.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right. Well, if you guys want to send questions in for the podcast, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. You can also call or text 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632. Or you can leave us a DM on Twitter at rsbnb. All right. So, tech news. We got a bit of an anthology here of tech news covering the entire Christmas break.
Lots of tech news.
Lots of tech news. And tech news that, you know, deals with security and perhaps one of the largest security vulnerabilities since Windows XP and the numerous worms that Windows XP faced out there. So chances are by this point you've heard of the twin bugs known as Meltdown and Spectre. Each of these bugs basically targets your system at the lowest of levels and can honestly corrupt your data to the point that a bad actor can get access to pretty much anything that's running inside your computer and in active memory. So how much have you heard about these? I mean, they were going crazy about them on the mainstream media, I know, and they didn't cover them properly because one of them basically said you need to throw your computer away.
Well, is this – I mean, I never knew the name of them. Is this the Intel?
Yes, this is the Intel bugs.
Okay. Well, enough that I immediately contacted you going, am I safe? I don't know what to do. Is it okay?
And what did I tell you?
It's all good, man. You're probably fine.
You're probably fine because there's nothing you can do about it. All right. So these are a pair of vulnerabilities that can, you know, provide unprecedented access to the data on your user's system. Now, Meltdown and Spectre are not specifically confined to one application or an operating system platform. The exploit goes all the way down to the bare hardware that runs our computer. In this case, the CPU, the main chip that is most often built by Intel. Now, Meltdown is the easier of these vulnerabilities to exploit, but proofs of concept have been written for both Meltdown and Spectre, meaning it's possible that someone could potentially weaponize these exploits. The industry has known about these vulnerabilities since the summer of 2017, June or July, and we're working on fixes ever since then. It is only now that they have been published publicly. Now, as we previously mentioned, these vulnerabilities go down to the actual physical hardware on your computer. And, you know, most time these vulnerabilities are as a result of something gone wrong in the operating system. And, you know, a classic case was Windows XP of the Windows metafile images being able to run executable code, which is a bad idea because you can go to a website in Internet Explorer, download this image, and lo and behold, there's some code running on your system that you didn't okay to run. So that's most of the time what we think of when we have a bad vulnerability. And that's the vulnerability I was talking about with Windows XP. Now, this one goes down to the actual physical silicon and inside that CPU on your chip. So for the longest time, you know, in the 1990s and whatnot, we gauged our CPU performance on our computers on the pure clock speed of the CPU, you know, the megahertz or gigahertz that you saw. You know, a 1 gigahertz CPU was big back in the late 1990s. Now we're up to, you know, 3, 3.4, 3.8 in some cases, and we've hit a limit, so to speak, of the amount of megahertz that we can pull out of a CPU just because the actual metal that we're using, silicon, isn't capable of operating much faster than where we are right now. And Intel had some interesting experiments with this back in the mid-2000s to the point where they had to completely scrap a microarchitecture because it ran too hot and it didn't serve its purpose. So the result of this was, throughout Intel's development of modern CPUs, is that they had to make advancements that weren't necessarily related to the pure clock speed that you see, you know, 900 megahertz, 2.4 gigahertz, 3 gigahertz, 3.4 gigahertz. There are additional advancements every time a new CPU comes out from Intel that refine the process of central processing units or CPUs. And one of these back in the 1990s was called pipelining, and this became progressively more pronounced on CPUs. Pipelining is essentially a technique that allows the splitting of the execution of instructions on your CPU between different components. So, for example, if you were calculating a simple algebraic equation of A plus B equals C, but B had a more involved calculation, so that could be farmed out to a different part of the CPU and then come back to the initial spot that began the calculation. That's effectively pipelining at a very high level. So basically what this means is that pipelining is now critical because it allows our CPU to work on the same chunk of data in different areas of the CPU, thereby improving performance massively. Does that make sense? Pipelining?
It does. I mean, I'm a layman when it comes to this, but it kind of sounds like, is this in any way like hyper-threading? Like how you get your more multi-cores out of
it? Okay. So pipelining is something that happens within hyper-threading. Hyper-threading is effectively adding a second counter towards the CPU instruction. So it's performing, in theory, two things at the same time, but in reality, they're sequential. It just happens so fast. So pipelining is used in hyper-threading. Hyper-threading is a little bit lower than this on the totem pole.
Okay.
Now, a second thing that Intel did to make the CPUs faster is called branch prediction. So when anyone writes code in any kind of programming language, they use some form of conditional statements. So this means that, you know, if this is true, do something. Otherwise, you're going to do something else. Basically, if this, then that. That is the most basic level of programming that can ever happen. It exists in assembly-level code on the processor, machine code on the processor, and high-level languages that you use in your web browser like JavaScript. So it exists everywhere. And, you know, this becomes a lot more fundamental at the basic level of the bare hardware, so much that it is now impossible to run a modern CPU and modern computer without branching. Because if there was no branching, there would be no way to go back to the beginning of a routine and try again. And therefore, there would be no repetition. And CPUs would be dumb, effectively, if not for branching. So branching is at the very heart of what CPUs do. Now, Intel, in their infinite wisdom, created a new feature called branch prediction. And what this does is that the CPU will look at the conditionals going on and past results to attempt to predict with some level of accuracy which branch of the code is going to be taken and be ready to take those next steps. Now, this is where our exploit comes from, because with branch prediction, the CPU will actually execute both paths of the branch, the path that is true and the path that is false. So you can think of this in that if you have a password manager or you're entering your password into your computer system, and you enter the right password, it goes and it logs you in, no question. But if you enter the wrong password, it's going to also attempt to execute that branch where you successfully logged into your system. That's happening on the deepest levels of our Intel CPUs. And that is the core of this vulnerability, is that if you do something, you know, like, for example, if you take your mouse right now, Tanis, and you hover over your close button in Windows, right? Mm-hmm. There is an if statement that says, if user has hovered into this area, make that button turn red. So there is also a branch that is taken internally where you didn't hover over that. So that is what branch prediction is. It is executing those paths. And then once it knows the actual result, it backsteps over it and removes the steps that were taken that were not correct. Now, the problem here occurs because that has already happened on the CPU. And as a result, the results of those calculations are stored on the processor's L1 and L2 cache. Now, L1 and L2 cache are segments of memory inside the processor that can be accessed very, very quickly. And because of that, this data is there and it can be accessed regardless of whether or not that branch was actually taken and if the decision made was actually true. And that's where our vulnerability comes from. Now, ordinarily, this would be fine. But as you know, there are malicious actors out there and malicious code in our applications that will sometimes attempt to access memory that they're not supposed to access. And in this case, we're talking about specifically accessing memory of the kernel on our operating system, which the kernel is a very low-level piece of software that controls the interactions between what you do on your computer and the physical hardware. So your memory, your hard drives, your CPU, your graphics card, and so on and so forth. The kernel controls all that. And regular applications that you use and download are not supposed to be able to access that memory. Now, if the memory is read from the kernel, which is protected under modern operating systems, a second instruction will then be used to determine whether that application in question is allowed to access the kernel memory. This check then sees if the memory is able to be accessed is also a branch. So there we go. It is vulnerable to the same branch prediction flaw where both the true path and the false path are executed, meaning that, you know, even if the instruction is executed, it's accessing raw memory from the kernel due to branch prediction algorithms and this speculative execution that is going on in our CPUs. Therefore, it's ultimately possible for the rogue application in question to start acting on kernel memory before it's shut down by the operating system due to the fact that our CPUs are so fast, to the tune of 3.4 gigahertz. That's how fast mine runs. What's your clock speed, Dennis?
4.0.
Okay, so 4 gigahertz, that means that, you know, there's, I think I might have my order of magnitude wrong, but there are 4 billion calculations being done per second in your CPU potentially.
Holy crap, I didn't know that.
Right?
I just knew it played games really good.
And because of that, how fast it is, wow, okay. The CPU is able to jump back and forth between the L1 and L2 cache on the CPU. These are at a hardware level, and they're essentially an information pool to temporarily hold data that's been called in from your RAM or your memory sticks to be used by the CPU. And because of that, it's able to be read in a reasonable amount of time, a few thousand bytes per second. And this is, you know, the whole reason that this is possible is because the operating system structures applications to allow for user-level applications, so your browsers, your games, and your text editors and whatnot, to access the operating system kernel, to write to the memory, to access the graphics card, to access the hard drives, and so on and so forth. That's the whole reason this exploit is possible. Now, the fix for this is to flush the cache, the L1 and L2 cache, frequently after performing operations that require kernel level execution, i.e. the system calls of your operating system. And that is what Apple, Microsoft, Google have all done when they have shipped their updates recently for their security to fix this specific exploit. So as you can tell, this is something that you could not protect yourself against. The only real protection from this is for Intel to micropatch the CPU.
So why was the mainstream, I'm guessing because they probably didn't understand this, but why did they like instill fear in me to where I had to contact you and say, are they going to slow my computer down? Because they were saying,
right,
this could slow your computer down 5 to 30%.
Right. And going, you know, what? They don't understand this. And the truth of the reality is that, yes, certain calls to the kernel and system-level calls can potentially be slowed down by upwards of 30% with this fix. That can happen. Mm-hmm. And the thing that the mainstream media doesn't get is that the vast majority of calls happening on a regular computer are not to the kernel level and the system, where that's going to, you know, impact this this by 30% performance. Benchmarks made to iOS 11.2.2 after they patched that update show no negligible decrease in user performance, because of course iOS is a largely user-facing operating system and you're not making extensive calls to the kernel on iOS to do things. So that's where the mainstream media got this horribly wrong. And that's just one side of it. That is the meltdown vulnerability that can be executed really easily by malicious applications.
Do we have benchmarks for Windows?
No. But, okay. You know, if you, like, for example, web browsing won't be hit that much. What could potentially be hit are things that require lots of write operations, for example, because every time you write to a hard drive, you are contacting the kernel. So if you are exporting a large video file, that might be affected. If you are software encoding audio or software encoding video, that might also be affected. So we're going to have to wait and see about where the dust falls on all this. But there is a potentiality among certain use cases to see a performance hit on this. But it's
what
not,
about my game, Shane? What about
the games? Games will be fine.
Okay.
Most of the time.
Like that caveat.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to come down to how the graphic drivers are structured, but the vast majority of games out there today are not CPU bound, which is where this problem lies. Most of the games happen on the graphics card. So we should be okay for that, because games aren't necessarily accessing the operating system kernel every couple seconds. So
you just overclock to compensate for your slowdown?
You know, you could do that if you have the ability to overclock. That would be a way of going around it, but I have not seen an overclock in a number of years that has given a 30% performance boost.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
Okay.
The second part of this exploit is called Spectre, and it's the more general of the two vulnerabilities and is harder to exploit, or so the experts think with this. Spectre instead focuses on specific memory buffers rather than the operating system kernel itself. And this edit core has the potential to break the fundamental points of memory isolation, because, you know, if you are running Chrome and you have Word running next to each other, Chrome and Word are not supposed to be able to interact with each other, right? And as with your password manager, those three things are not supposed to interact with each other. That's memory isolation. So another good example of this is your web browser and JavaScript, which runs on practically every web page in existence today. JavaScript is functionally isolated from within the browser, so it shouldn't be able to access the browser's memory, but in theory with Spectre, it could. And, you know, once again, this is all exploited using the CPU's branch prediction facilities, and, you know, specifically in the case of the CPU tricking itself to revealing the data that is being worked on right now by forcefully having it execute the wrong side of the branch using branch prediction. So that's then exploited by the fast CPU speeds and the caches that we talked about, and allows you to potentially reveal data that you're not supposed to have access to. And, you know, according to the knowledge out there, no one has exploited Spectre yet. It's the harder one to exploit. But the issue with Spectre is that it can't be fixed with an operating system patch. Intel needs to patch the microcode of the CPUs in question. And I think they said by the end of this week, they aim to have 50% of them patched. And by the end of next week, they're going to have 90% of them patched. So Intel is working on that. Though if you have a CPU older than 2013, you're not going to get your performance back.
How do they push that patch out? Are we getting new CPUs? Or like what?
It's going to come happen? In the form of effectively a driver update for your motherboard on Windows and all the other operating systems out there. And what it's going to do is it's going to download a little piece of software through Windows Update. And Windows is going to run that, and it's going to push some instructions to the CPU, and the CPU is effectively going to rewrite itself to prevent this from happening.
Okay.
Yeah. because there is actual code that runs on the CPUs internally, if you can believe it or not. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah, and because of the way the instruction sets on these CPUs are set up, CPUs that are 2014 and newer are going to be able to recover their performance after this, but CPUs 2013 and older are not going to be able to. So,
I think I'm newer than that. So
yeah. So I mean, after all the patches come out, you should be fine.
Cool. Yeah. Okay.
Now, who's vulnerable with this? Well, any Intel chip made since 1995.
So are you telling me that the AMD users are getting the last laugh? I mean, ones that didn't AMD catch fire thought
they
anyway.
AMD thought they were going to get the last laugh on this, but the vulnerability was actually proven to work on modern AMD chips as well. So,
oh, they're right there with us.
That's right. Okay. Also, ARM chips are impacted, so that means Android, iOS are also going to have a problem as well.
Oh, this is everything. Yeah. I mean, this is...
It's everything. It's everything. Like,
I really... Yeah, this is really dangerous. I really hope that our governments have gotten this stuff under control. I mean, this is... That could be very dangerous in the hands of a bad actor.
Exactly. And, you know, Spectre is more the theoretical exploit and hasn't been exploited yet, but Meltdown proofs of concept are already out there. Chrome is updated. And, you know, the next question is it really this bad? And the answer is yes, it is really this bad. The proof of concepts have shown that, you know, they have been able to make an entire access of memory using the Meltdown flaw. And that could potentially mean access to, you know, credit card numbers, passwords, and so on and so forth. So it's really bad. But In some ways, it's not really bad because there's nothing you can do to protect yourself against it until the patches arrive.
I guess the only protection you have is hoping that you're just a little fish in a real big pond.
Yeah, that's one thing as well. And, you know, I'm going to say this, and, you know, it comes with every security flaw and security event that we talk about. But the best way to protect yourself against these is to only run applications that you trust from reputable sources. And something that a lot of people don't like to do is to run your updates for, you know, whether it be a Mac or a Windows machine or even an iOS device. Run those updates as soon as they become available because they have these security fixes in them. Microsoft fixed it in December. So Windows platforms are safe with this. So run your updates. That's the best way to be safe with this.
Yeah, I run mine now.
Yep. You know. I mean, you know, there were countless people back in the day who didn't run Windows updates on XP, and that just caused so many disasters. There's also, you know, people who don't update Windows 10 because they don't like Microsoft changing things. Well, the answer is you need to run these updates. Otherwise, you're going to be at a major security risk.
Yeah. That is why people didn't want to do it, because they're constantly dicking with stuff. And you're like, oh, where did my stuff go? So, yeah.
Yeah.
But security is worth it. So yeah. Just learn where the stuff is that they put.
And then listen to RSP the update, because if anything like this ever comes through, I do make it a point to fully understand the vulnerabilities that are going on here. So.
Yeah, hey, that was the best explanation I heard.
And you know, this was really hard for me to write because I could have written so much more on this. It could have been double or triple the length, but I had to condense it down, and I had to use language that didn't require previous knowledge of hardware architecture.
In other words, you're saying I had to dumb it down for all you people.
Well, no, it's a very complicated issue.
All right, I know. Yeah.
Anyways, if you want to read more about these in the off chance, I have a link in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com to both the Meltdown and Spectre vulnerabilities, where you can read the full scientific papers that were published on these. Also, some video of Meltdown in action. So there's a really creepy one where they reconstruct a photo of a cat of using Meltdown from memory it wasn't supposed to be able to access.
Okay.
Yep.
That's weird.
Indeed. All right. So our next piece of tech news relates to Apple and that Apple battery discussion that went on over the Christmas break. Because, you know, people always thought that their iOS devices slowed down as they got older for some reason. Well, here we are.
Do you think this was a bunch to do about nothing? I didn't really think what Apple did was nefarious, but no, boy, people took it that way.
Definitely, they did take it that way. And think about this for anyone who thinks it was nefarious. You have an iOS device, your phone. Would you rather have that device slow down, or would you rather have it shut off in the middle of an important phone call?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I was thinking, too.
So basically what happened here is people online discovered that, you know, there are certain iOS devices that have slowed down their clock rates of their CPUs by as much as half in some cases. And there was some correlation testing done, and lo and behold, the deceleration of the CPU's clock rate was related to the age of the battery on the iOS devices. So this, you know, led to more scientific testing and more scientific analysis, and it was ultimately discovered that, yeah, Apple is slowing these CPUs down. And, you know, this gained so much traction even in the mainstream media that Apple came out with a message on this issue and basically came clean and they said, you know, yeah, we're doing this because we had to make a choice, and that choice was that either, you know, we shut your device down prematurely or we slow it down to prevent it from shutting down. And I think it's quite clear which people would prefer to happen, right?
Yep, but that outrage machine cranked up and it's off to the races.
The outrage, I think, comes from the fact that people always feel a slowdown of when they first install a new version of iOS on an older iOS device, and that's due to a number of reasons. I'm not going to go into what they are on the show. We already had a huge explainer this episode. I don't think we want a second huge explainer right now. But you know, suffice to say, these issues with the slowdown of iOS installing a new version on an iOS device do normally mitigate themselves, you know, a few days, a week or so after you install that update. And, you know, it just gets into your head that iOS 10 is now slower than iOS 9 was. And that sticks for the relation or the remainder of your use with iOS 10 or iOS 11 in this case. So basically what Apple did is they said, yeah, you know, the battery life does slow down iOS. And now that this is out there, we are going to be sending you a option to have a battery replaced on your iOS device if it is an iPhone 6 or newer. You get one battery replacement at $29 if you have an iPhone 6 or newer, because these are the devices that are affected by this. And yes, that encompasses the iPhone SE. Normally, iPhone battery replacements are $79, but as a result of this outrage and the media attention it gained, Apple is offering now everyone a one-time replacement of $29. So if you have an iPhone that's newer than an iPhone 6 or iPhone 6 or newer and it's slowing down, you might as well go to your nearest Apple store and get that free battery replacement, and you will see an increase in performance on this. And, you know, to mitigate things going forward, Apple is going to be introducing a new section in the iOS settings app for battery and battery health and whatnot to show if the battery is indeed slowing down your device and if maybe you should have your battery replaced. So I think for their part here, Apple responded very professionally to this. I think the outrage came from the fact that people were assuming this was something that was planned and that it was linked, you know, to age rather than perhaps battery health, in an attempt to maybe try and get people to upgrade to a new iOS device, right? But
yeah, that's exactly what people thought. And I mean, I don't think the iPhone 10 has really had that great of a reception, and it's expensive and
Yeah.
I think people just felt they were being pushed to have to upgrade their
phones. that's why I went with the 8, because I mean, the 10 is clearly a technology preview at this point. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I haven't noticed mine slowing down. You know, I have a 6.
Which one do you have? A 6? Okay.
Well, I have the 6 Plus S. That's the big, you know, the bigger screen one. And I haven't, I mean, I don't know. I never really noticed it running any slower or anything like that. So, I mean, maybe it does, but I haven't noticed any problems. I mean, I'm take advantage of a $30 battery. I mean, I think that was a good call. That's
yeah,
a good call.
Definitely.
Well, and they surely can afford it. So, I really haven't noticed a difference.
And, you know, I think this is also going to draw more attention to batteries in general, because if you think about a smartphone, the battery is the most antiquated component on that smartphone, because it is effectively a collection of chemicals that is discharging at a controlled rate to provide energy. We don't have a better solution for that yet. So
that's true. It's kind of that's something to think about.
But at the end of the day, Apple did the right thing, came clean on this, and is going to provide more information on the batteries going forward. And, you know, a feature that they call it that people have long expected is actually true. So, yeah. All right. And our last piece of tech news is more of a lighthearted one, and this is something related to the Google Accelerated Mobile Pages project. So you'll note that sometimes if you're browsing on Google Search or the Google app on your phone, you'll see that URLs there have the google.com/AMP and then the URL that you were going to, right? Well, this stands for Accelerated Mobile Pages, and this is Google's project to make the web a lot faster for people using Google Search on mobile. And, you know, people might not like this and, you know, the fact that it changes the URLs to be google.com/AMP/, you know, whatever. What Google is actually doing now is they are offering a way to have the native URL of the web page you were browsing appear and be used. And basically what they're doing with this, they're implementing a new version of their caching service based on the new web packaging standard, which will allow for websites to take part in the Accelerated Mobile Pages caching project without needing to send their web page requests through Google, which is something a lot of people who are concerned about security and concerned about privacy and concerned about Google not necessarily knowing exactly where you go on the internet are going to be very very proud of. So this is something that Google takes one step forward here to put themselves ahead of the competition in this regard. And it's going to help mobile a lot because, believe it or not, accelerated mobile pages in the developing world where bandwidth isn't as extensive as it is here in North America and Europe really relies on this to access the web quickly. So we're going to see a lot of improvements with AMP this year. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. Do you ever see google.com/AMP when you're browsing on your phone?
I would never notice that in a million years.
All right.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And
it's crazy.
And, you know, the best way if people want to see this is to just install the Google app if you're on iOS or use any of the default Android recommendation engines or Google Assistant, I think it's called now. So. All right. Well, that wraps up tech news for this week. I realized tech news was a pretty long segment this week, but we had to get that out.
A little beefy.
That's right. On to other things and the first Skill of the Month update for 2018. The Skill of the Month is magic, not drawing as much activity as our December Constitution one did, but Parnassius is in first place with 2.2 million XP gained. Second place is Jamandy52 with 1.7 million, and in third we have XBlades with 1.2 million XP gained in this magic skill of the month. So
nice. Very good.
While we're here, I would also just like to highlight everyone to our Informer Roundup. Welcome to 2018. The first Informer Roundup looks back at what we did in December and also provided some good discussion on the Skill of the Month stats for the year of 2017. So I'll just share those with you guys right now. In 2017, Jamandy 52 gained the most experience across all competitions with 270,095,897 experience gained.
Way to go.
Second place with Touchpad Pro with 183,000,000 experience, 4,285. And third was Parnassius with 168,018,743. Fourth, Flash with 79,850,608. And in fifth, we had Undoer with 55,690,389 experience. And in total, through 2017 in all Skill of the Month competitions, 952,898,383 experience was gained.
Wow, way to go, guys. Wow.
Absolutely astounding amount of XP. We'll have to see if 2018 brings more than that, but fingers crossed on that.
And yeah, hard to beat, but we can do it.
If you want to read this Informer Roundup or any of the December articles, just head on over to informer.rsbnb.com. Now, I think it goes without saying that when you skip a couple weeks of RSBNB update, you have a lot of achievements to go through. We're going to go through some of these right now. So starting off, we had Warrock with 120 invention on January 10th. Tatagi got 99 Herblore also on the 10th. Blue Hebard with 99 attack also on the 10th. Moving on to the 9th now. 1, 2, 3, 4 were cool with 99 Constitution. Schnetz with 99 Dungeoneering. Catmac with 99 Magic. Now on the 7th, we had Mr. Zaros 357 with 99 Summoning. And Halal Bacon with 99 Herblore. Tanis, you also got 120 attack on January 6th. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Link V got 99 agility on the 5th. Also on the 5th, we have Clean Tossels with 120 Dungeoneering and 120 Invention. We also had Sugar Man with 99 Herblore on the 5th. Moving on to the 4th now was Link V with 99 Thieving. Jaguar 007 with 99 Prayer on the 3rd. And on the 1st, we had a Seafarer with 99 Agility and 99 Construction, as well as Comp Sci with 120 Dungeoneering, and a Seafarer again with 99 Defense and 99 Crafting. And finally, on the 1st, we had Silver Wiz 9 with 99 Woodcutting. That's Paul, who you have all heard on the show before, PFK 99s, with his impressive story about getting on the show, which was on the clip show. And then on the last day of 2017, we had Sebage with 120 Slayer, PTV Solly with 99 Magic, Row of Snow with 99 Herblore. And that's it for the 31st of January. So what do we got for the rest of the...
All right. Well, we have some familiar names. So we have Jaguar 007 with 99 Slayer on December 30th. And we have Jaguar 007 with 99 Summoning on December 30th. He was busy. Or she, however. And Link V with 99 Hunter. That was on the 29th. Sugar Man with 99 Cooking on December 28th. Let's see here. Pogora with 99 defense on the 28th. Sugar Man again with 99 smithing on December 28th. Pogora again with 99 attack on the 28th. Pogora with 99 magic on the 28th. Maskaman?
Miss Conan.
Oh, there we go. Sorry. I need to increase my magnification here. Miss Conan with 99 runecrafting December 27th. Barrage Tank with 120 invention on the 27th. Link V with 99 divination on December 26th. Comp Sci with 120 invention on December 26th. Noxbow with 99 cooking on December 25th. Brappa with 120 attack on December 24th. Atnus with 99 Herblore on December 23rd. Katahi Katahai Atua with 99 summoning. That was on the 23rd. Merowick with 99 Slayer, December 21st. Desmo 360 with 99 Divination on December 20th. ATN 99 Dungeoneering on December 20th. Katarhai Atua. That's so butchered, I'm sure. 99 Fletching on the 20th. Desmo 360 with 99 Slayer on the 20th. X Blades with 120 ranged on December 19th. Halal Bacon, hala, with 99 Magic December 19th. And Vanik with 99 Agility December 18th. Miss Coneman with 99 Agility on December 17th. And Zookeeper 53 with 99 Magic December 17th.
That was quite the list.
Very good, everybody. Great job, everyone.
Good job. Yeah. Nice achievements. And that is what happens when you take a break from the podcast for almost 3 weeks. So,
yeah. And my apologies if I butchered your name. It's kind of a thing I do, not on purpose, but it happens. So, I'll try.
And I think that kind of leads us nicely into your pick of the week, doesn't it?
It actually does, because hopefully, that's not going to happen in the near future. So the pick of the week for this week is something that is called eSight. And eSight is electronic glasses, essentially. It's a combination of a camera and almost like VR headset in a way. And I got the privilege of being able to go and travel and try this on Monday. So I've actually tried the system out. I heard about it and I thought, yeah, you know, that would be cool. But, you know, I'm just somebody that always, when it comes to this, I try to be realistic and I try to not get my hopes up and stuff. And, but when I heard that they were specifically developed for, someone that had Stargardt's disease, which is the same thing that I have, I thought, well, it might be worth a try. And so I went and I tried these on. And what it is it's like it almost looks like a visor, and it has a camera that points out like directly kind of over your nose. And on the inside are two LED screen. Well, they're like some high tech LED.
It's OLED. Not, OLED, that would be.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. So it's got those screens on the inside. And you have a hand control that allows you to do just all kinds of stuff. So before I tried the glasses on, they ran me through an eye chart, which I basically couldn't see at all. They estimated pretty much like I'm classified as light sensitive, but they estimated my sight at maybe somewhere around 2,800. That was a guess.
And just for comparison's sake, where would a person with regular eyesight fall on that same spectrum?
Well, I mean, if you have perfect eyesight, you're 20/20.
Okay. So 2,800 then compared to 20/20.
Yeah, that's no, you know, that's no central vision. That's
so like 20, and then the second number is 800 is basically what we're saying then in this case, right? Or exactly. 2,800.
No. Okay. It's 20 and the second number is 20/800.
All right, 20/800. Gotcha, yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. And I put the glasses on and went through and looked at the eye chart and went through the eye test again. I made it all the way to the 20/40 line with no problem whatsoever. and made it to the 20/20 line was a little bit harder, but it has a function on these glasses where you can freeze the frame and kind of zoom in a little bit further and kind of do some little tweaks, make it a little bit more clear. And it wasn't fast, but I read the 20/20 line. And I can't describe that feeling. You know, like I said, it isn't fast, and it's going to take some learning. But I looked down at a table, and I was able to read. I took my daughter's storybook. I've never been able to read to her. You know, it's something I love reading. It's something I always, you know, I want to share with her. I've never been able to read her book. I looked down at the table. I could read her book. I was on the 20th floor. I could look across the street at the top of a neighboring building, and I saw an American flag. He's like, can you, you know, the person doing the demonstration asked me if I could see it. I said, yeah, and I can count the stars.
Wow.
You know, I saw my family's faces clearly from across the room, and none of these things have happened since I was 17. So it was pretty overwhelming. It was pretty remarkable. So that's my pick of the week. Esight glasses. They're Esight eyewear. It's remarkable technology. And I literally say it's straight out of Star Trek. It kind of looks like Geordi's visor a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of does. It kind of does.
yeah, I just,
and I so mean, cool. Obviously the next step after this has been mainstreamed will be, going with a direct implant to the brain, but we're not quite there yet. But so this requires, what do you think? Did they say what the minimum level of vision that is required for some people on this?
I don't. It works better for some and not as well for others. There's a lot of variable. There's a lot of just variety when it comes to being visually impaired. Like someone with the exact same disease that I have, because of where your blind spot may be or because of the way it may have progressed, you can have totally different experiences, even with the eSight eyewear. So for me, it was a godsend. For other people, it may be effective. It may not be as effective as what it was with me. So, you know, it's definitely something you want to, you definitely want to try it, and you definitely want to experience it, because with any assistive technology, one size doesn't fit all.
Right.
But
this
thing has everything that I have ever used that helped me. This incorporated it. Like Shane, I could look at anything with words on it. I could freeze the frame and those glasses would read it to me if I couldn't see it. I could see it, but if I couldn't, the glasses would read it to me.
Wow. So it's doing some form of character recognition then with it too.
Yeah. It's truly amazing. It has an HDMI input. You plug yourself into your computer. You plug yourself into your TV. You don't have to worry about it no more. Like the TV is like the monitor is your glasses, and it's VR, so it knows when you're moving your head, and it's looking at different. You can look at, you know, the screen differently. Like it's
so
really
basically
remarkable.
What this would allow you to do is would allow you to use a computer without a magnifier. Then is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that is utterly amazing when you consider how long you have been needing to use other forms of rudimentary assistive technology for, and this could become, you know, be such a huge leap in that regard. That is really astounding. And, you know, for that reason, that's probably one of the best pick of the weeks we've ever had on the podcast. So. Oh,
well, yeah, it's, you know, thanks. It was you know, I was blessed to be lucky enough to go and try it. And, you know, don't get me wrong, it's an expensive piece of technology, and it's not, you know, most insurance doesn't cover this, at least not in the US. It's a Canadian company, so props to Canada. There you go. I think they're based out of Toronto. And it is, you know, I mean, it's expensive, but for what it does, you can't put a price on your on your vision like that. So,
definitely.
It was really cool. I have a I have a video that kind of – I kind of describe my experience and all that kind of stuff. So it was – because I was overwhelmed when I got home. I'm like, I got to get this out somehow. Yeah. Like, because I was just speechless. Like, I almost was in my own shell for a little while, you know, like, because it had been – it had been 20-some years since I had seen any of these things. There was – my mom made me one of those picture books, you know, kind of like a Shutterfly book. Right. When my daughter was born, mm-hmm. had all these pictures in it. And, I saw it as best as I could when I got it. My daughter's 5 now. I took that with me because I wanted to see, you know, I wanted to look at it. And I'm looking at it and I see something there I've never seen before. My mom put the lyrics to this song and, it had some sentimental meaning. This is the song that we had my mom and my wife's mom light candles when we were getting married, and it's talking about it's Forever Young by Rod Stewart, right? So right. It's all about passing that on. I never knew it was there. I did not wow. know that was in that book until that day. And I mean, what can you say? You know, it was just like,
yeah, there is no putting a value on that when you put it in that form of context. So,
yeah,
that's astounding. And I'm very happy for you that you got a chance to try that out. And for those of you guys listening to the podcast and you might have been wondering why Tannis has such an affection for special effect and whatnot. Well, this is why. So,
yeah. yep.
Watch Tannis in this space this year, I think we can say.
Yeah.
All right. So what have you been up to on RS over the break?
I've actually been like really super busy. I've had a lot of stuff to do this week. But I actually did a little bit of div just preparing for double XP because I think we're gonna try to not spend GP this year, right? And just maybe do some Slayer.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing some div to just make some charge packs
now's
so I can
time.
Slayer.
Now's the yeah. time to start preparing.
So that's what I literally logged in, wasn't paying attention. I think I was telling my Echo to do something, and I looked over because I heard fireworks, and I got the div pet. So yeah, that was cool.
Oh, that's great. I thought you meant you heard fireworks outside because New Year's or something like that. All right, well, that's good, and that's a good reminder to everyone to start preparing for double XP weekend, since we know it'll be February 23rd through the 26th. But as for me, over the break, I have just been continuing to work on the invention side of things, mainly with fishing. During that, doing it with arc and some waterfall fishing along the time when my arc spots ran out. I'm now at level 92 divination. I meant to say invention, but 92 invention. So that's coming along nicely. Did the Slayer task this week, and we'll probably be going for a bit of combat on that invention side of things. So yeah, that's that.
Nice.
Not too much, but definitely lots of time spent on RS over the break, so that was nice. So.
Very cool.
All right. Well, that wraps up the first episode of RSBNB Update for the year of 2018. We'll be back next week with what I'm guessing going to be Hattie and Skull. So we'll see you then, everyone. And until then, have a good week.